You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
We were wondering about the current situation for independent and foreign film distributors. In the earliest days of cinema, all films were made by independents. Hollywood studios didn't dominate the market for many decades, but once they did, independently made films were poorly distributed. And then during the 60s and 70s, both foreign and independent films saw remarkable growth. That all changed again in the past few years when the market for both types shrank considerably. So to find out what that means for moviegoers, we've invited representatives from two of the most ambitious independent distributors, Emily Russo of Zeitgeist Films and Amy Heller of Milestone Film and Video, to talk with us here on our show. Also joining us is David Fenkel of Oscilloscope Laboratories, which has entered into an innovative distribution agreement with Milestone recently. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
When we originally envisioned this segment, we were going to discuss New Yorker Films, which ended operations a few months ago, and at the time it seemed like an omen, the end of an era of fairly easy access to independent and independent cinema. Is that a fair assessment?
I don't know. I think the New Yorker situation might have been, you know, it was obviously somewhat related to the whole downturn of movies and everything, but it was also a little bit specific to that company and the situation that they were in. Many other companies
had such a great catalog.
They did. It was definitely really a very, very sad moment for independent film that they had to go out of business.
Well, speaking to both of you, Emily and Amy, aren't companies like yours being squeezed on both ends? There seem to be fewer quality films being made these days, and many of them are either financed or purchased outright by big studios, and then repertory film houses are closing, video stores are going out of business, and the market for serious cinema seems to be shrinking. So where does that leave you?
Well, all those are challenges, definitely. But even more, I think, is the approaching effect that the Internet is having and going to have on us.
We're going to blame the Internet on this one, too?
Well, I think, well, a little bit. Both directly in terms of people, you know, downloading illegal BitTorrent versions of films all over the world, and also the effect on the journalism industry, which is we're tremendously reliant on. If there are no film reviewers, who are going to review our films? And our films are particularly sensitive to that.
But there also seem to be changing tastes. There just don't seem to be as many people who want to go see a difficult film. No? I mean...
Yeah, I think it's very, very hard to find the right film right now at the right time. There are films that open that do well, so it's not that the audience isn't there at all, but it is very, very difficult to find, to know. There are also films that will open and almost nobody will come. So I think, in a way, almost that the baseline that used to be there, that if you had a film and just some level of business would be there when you open that film, I think that has really disappeared, and that is not the case anymore, and now you have to be just extra, super, more cautious than ever before in terms of what you do, in terms of what kind of commitments you make and when you open something.
Well, David, you released Wendy and Lucy, which got great reviews. Mm-hmm. What kind of box office did it do?
Yeah, it did a little bit under $1 million in the box office.
Which is not all that exciting.
Well, for that film, it's just about, we broke even coming out of theatrical. And, you know, you're talking to three companies that are pretty lean and, you know, a movie like that, you know, we wanted to put enough financial backing behind it, but not too much where you're getting burned out of theatrical. So a movie like that, you felt like, you know, the publicity and the word of mouth and the critical praise, you know, actually it all did hit for that film. And we do consider that a good success because it's profitable for the filmmakers and for us. And the movie did get out. You know, remember the movie didn't have, you know, there's no musical score. It's not for mass audiences. And, you know, to your point about the Internet, we haven't seen much piracy, so that really hasn't affected us yet. But it's more that for us, it's, you know, as new technologies come in and old models are kind of end up dying, you have to kind of sift through the opportunity, you know, whether it be more Netflix or Netflix Digital or, you know, Blockbuster's been actually kind to us recently. And, you know, we started putting our stuff on Hulu just to get some exposure. There's not real money in there, but, you know, we're just trying to try and do a lot of different things. The real sad part is kind of the theatrical experience, like that you said, that baseline. You just can't guarantee that anymore, and you have to really watch, you know, how much you spend on P&A and on a production side, too.
Well, Oscilloscope is a fairly young company. Mm-hmm. Isn't it just about a year old? You founded it with Adam Yauch of the Beastie Boys. Mm-hmm. So is this a break with the usual approach to film? Are you basing it more on the way indie record labels work?
In some cases we are. Kind of somewhat in our marketing, we do. I mean, Adam and his designers, you know, have a certain aesthetic to it, and kind of keep somewhat of the integrity of the film intact versus just going straight for films that are solely marketable. You know, Emily and Amy's companies, they do the same thing. I wouldn't say that we're being incredibly more innovative. You guys, it's not about that. But it's for him, you know, there's definitely going to be a certain amount of creative kind of control from our side and the filmmaker's side. We want the filmmakers very much involved.
Amy, how did your two companies hook up?
Well, for years, New Yorker was the company that distributed our DVDs. And in fact, just at the time that our contract was expiring, so was New Yorker, sadly. And we went and talked to a whole lot of different companies that were interested in carrying our catalog. And we just thought that the match with Oscilloscope was the best. We really liked their energy. We also liked that they're actually cared about the content of the films, which is why we're in business. They loved our films, and we loved meeting you guys. And Ian, who used to work with Zeitgeist and is just a very passionate DVD person, was also a big draw for us.
The film business has to adjust to the closing down of all the video stores in the same way that the record business has to adjust to the closing down of all the record stores?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, many, many people now buy their DVDs online. And so, you know, having a good relationship with Netflix and Amazon and Barnes & Noble becomes more and more important.
Emily, how do you find films now? Perhaps more important, how do you compete against studios bidding for the same movies if you really like one?
Well, interestingly, that part has actually improved for us because so many companies have gone out of business, the competition has really decreased, and we are actually finding that acquiring films is not that difficult right now. Also, I think expectations in general and the economy overall has sort of been a little bit of a wake-up call for people that they might not be able to get these big, fat, you know, advances. So films, to be able to acquire films has really been something that this has ironically enabled us to. Of course, again, you know, we have to find the right films, but that part has actually somewhat been a help to us.
But does loyalty count for anything?
Never has.
Zeitgeist put an awful lot of effort behind Irma Vep, which is a breakthrough film for Olivier Assayas, and then Lenny. All of his following films went to other distributors.
We could go through our whole catalog, and that would be the story of it. I mean,
Milestone, you had the same problem with Takeshi Kitano.
And Koreeda-san, too. But, you know, you can't be bitter. People have to do the best they can. It's hard to be an independent filmmaker, and we have sympathy for them, too. You know, they move on, and so do we.
Exactly. We're just out there scouting for the next talent. That's just what that's what we do.
My guests are Emily Russo, co-founder and co-president of Zeitgeist Films, Amy Heller, president and co-founder of Milestone Film and Video, and David Finkel, partner and co-founder of Oscilloscope Laboratories. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. I doubt anyone from the IRS is listening, so if it's not giving away too much, what percentage do you make from theatrical exhibition, and what about from the home video market? Are films being shown in theaters much anymore? Does Oscilloscope
still make up a lot of prints? Yeah, to Emily's point, a lot of the things that are happening that are, you know, the negative aspects of the distribution world, they're not done in a vacuum. I mean, I think there is, you know, the acquisition costs for the films have gone down. But also there is theater availability. Sometimes, we're playing our films, some of our foreign language films and documentaries in Regal and AMC theaters even in some markets. So the availability is there. It's getting through to your audience is much harder now, just kind of media saturation. So the theaters are there, and you know, oftentimes it is hard to reach a mass audience. If you're going to do more than a couple $100,000, you know, only a handful of independent films have been released this year that have crossed over $1 million.
Really?
So,
I mean, theaters are available? Because most of the small towns I go to, they have a Cineplex, so mm-hmm. they show five movies. They're the five movies you'd expect to see. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're actually finding, you know, in even places like Charlotte, North Carolina, and all over Miami, all over Florida, the Cineplexes are opening themselves up to us. They're not getting huge grosses, but you're still going to get your review. You're going to still get, you know, if there's a dedicated audience to a niche type of film, you can get them to come see it for opening weekend. In some of the major markets, you know, Boston and San Francisco, D.C., it gets tighter. But depending on, you know, when you're releasing your film, you can find something.
You get your week, basically, mm-hmm. and then, you know, you're out, is what it is. But honestly, it's almost always been like that. I mean, or at least for the last practically 20 years, it's been like that. That idea that you could let your film languish and build word of mouth has not been something that's been really viable for a very long time. So,
well, a generation ago, moviegoers were guided by companies like Janus and New Yorker Films, companies that pretty much decided what foreign films would be distributed in the United States. There was also a time when public television was more committed to bringing foreign films to viewers. Has anything replaced those companies other than your companies?
Well, the television side definitely is challenging for us.
Why do you think that is? Were they not getting viewers? Were they not? I always assumed that people wanted to watch Jules and Jim when they showed it on Channel 13.
We watched it, right? I don't know. It's just been a change in programming. I mean, you know, IFC and Sunday.
But is it the public, do you think, or is it the programmers?
I don't know. You'd have to ask TV people, yeah. I think. I mean, our situation is that because television is a really important insurance policy for a theatrical release, we think about whether or not we can sell something to television going in. And our best relationship has been with Turner Classic Movies. And it's really, as we go in, we think, okay, will TCM be interested in this at all? And so we've been doing much more English language films because in American films, we did Killer of Sheep and The Exiles, because those were films that fit into their programming and also fit into our historical, aesthetic, archival, and every other interest. So, you know, the TV lack is a big problem for all of us, and I think for building audiences for the future.
Do you know why is all of those filmmakers who in the past we relied on for quality films like Hosha Shen and Abbas Kiarostami and there are a bunch of others in France are not making films anymore? Is it just they're not getting the financing?
I don't know. Well, Olivier just made he did just recently make a film. He's got a pretty good track record with Abbas. I can't say. I don't know. That's been a long time since we had a film of his. And, you know, he's an Iranian filmmaker, so that could just be a whole other, you know, story. But generally, my perception every year, you know, Cannes comes up with a pretty big lineup of films from filmmakers, some new discoveries, many, you know, the Dardenne brothers, had their film. And, you know, just it does seem like within the foreign language film market, there are still films that are being made. Toronto's about to open with, you know, a couple of hundred films, many of them foreign language films.
Are you getting involved, David, with Blu-ray? Because there was, I read in Variety, then 3 or 4 years, whatever retail outlets are left will be selling Blu-ray only. And I don't know that many people who have Blu-ray video machines.
We have many filmmakers who've asked us to, and we've done it with one, which was Adam's film, Gunner for the Number One Spot, but we haven't done it since. DVD is a huge part of our business. I bet it's between 70% and 80% of our revenue per film. And so far, we haven't seen Blu-ray take off for independent films. And, you know, as a company, we very much, you know, feel how the marketplace is, and you know if the retailers are asking for it, yeah, we turn around if it made sense per film. But for us, you know, we're very focused, you know, just regular DVD.
Have you done any studies as to who's buying these films or seeing these films? Because it's my sense that younger viewers aren't as interested in the kinds of quality films that we've been discussing as older people are. Maybe that's just the old codger and me talking.
Well, you know, some of our films are documentaries as well, and we very much target, you know, to the demographic of what that special interest is. You know, whether it's the garden organizations or the water, you know, the water world. Right now, we have a film called Flow on DVD about the world water crisis. So, you know, that kind of range. You know, those documentaries can range in ages. But for more foreign language films, more art house, you know, it's whoever's going to the art house theaters. And, you know, it's funny, depending on the film, you'll see different demographics. You'll see Let the Right One In last year got a much younger audience. In a Loop gets a different audience.
It is interesting that documentaries are doing so well now. We're seeing an awful lot of documentaries released as feature films. That wasn't the case 10 or 15 years ago.
Right.
Michael Moore may have changed that.
Right, and I think David's point, you know, that you can really try to find a niche audience for that. It's not guaranteed, but, you know, we've always been very heavy on documentaries because we've always found that the marketing for that has been a little bit more tenable for us than with something like an English language feature film like Wendy and Lucy or something like that. But I just wanted to say, you know, a very active part of our business is the non-theatrical market, which is libraries, schools, and universities, and that is a young audience, and those people are booking and buying and renting our titles, our foreign language titles, too. So it's not that – I think there is a young audience for these films out there. Maybe it's not quite as what it used to be, but I don't think it's completely dead.
I was going to say, when you were talking about the theatrical release, because I started non-theatrical – at First Run Features and then at New Yorker Films, I've always done a lot of bookings of films in non-theatrical venues in theatrical release. So, you know, Araya, our next 50-year-old Venezuelan film, which is opening at the IFC Center, is going to premiere theatrically in October, but I'm showing it at a university in Florida earlier because they wanted to show it. I'm not going to get a theater in Gainesville. It's okay. Let them go.
Well, now IFC is releasing films to theaters and at the same time making them available on cable.
Right.
In fact, I think they get more money. No, I don't know. What, they get $5 for each view? Do you think that's the future?
It's going to be part of the future. It definitely will because it's very cost effective. And, you know, for the markets where you're not opening theatrically, you know, Kalamazoo, Michigan, or, you know, these places where, you know, the movie probably won't get to, you know, why not have 10 people buy it on, you know, VOD because it's not going to get to them until the DVD window anyway. So I think it's going to be a hybrid. I think some films, it may make sense for some films for that to happen. And some films, you know, we've been preserving it right now where we want our films to be considered theatrical films to have that profile. But in the future, I think you'll see a lot of companies playing with that depending on the film. Magnolia, you know, they decide film by film. IFC does it for every film. So, you know, people are playing around with it.
So before you leave, can I ask you what you're excited about in the coming year? You want to begin, David?
For titles or the
company? Yeah. For yourself.
For our company.
Yourself.
Yeah, of course. Well, we have next Friday, September 11th, we have No Impact Man, the documentary about Colin Bevin and his family who go off the environmental grid for a year. And then we also have Oren Moverman's film called The Messenger, which played Sundance. It stars Woody Harrelson and Ben Foster and Samantha Morton. It's about an Iraq war hero coming home and kind of reinstituting back into society as he is assigned to be a casualty notification officer. It's very powerful.
And
I'll mention we have a wonderful documentary opening up at the end of September at the IFC Center called The Horse Boy, which is the story of a family who takes their autistic son to Mongolia to be healed by shamans and ride horses. It's a really amazing movie.
And I wish all autistic families with autistic kids could afford to do that.
Well, they should at least definitely see the message of this film. It may not be necessary to do all
inner
that.
Inner Mongolia.
And we also are doing a foreign language film early next year called Mid-August Lunch, which was in New Directors, New Films this past spring. And it's a lovely Italian film, which we're going to be opening
and Amy?
Soon.
October 7th, we're going to be opening this 1959 film, Araya, which was shot in Venezuela, which is just over-the-top gorgeous and wild. And the filmmaker, a woman from 1959, Margot Benassaraf, will be coming up and doing some publicity, I hope. In November, Oscilloscope will be bringing out our DVD of The Exiles, which has way, way, way too many bonus features. Dennis went crazy. And we're going to be releasing Word is Out, the documentary about coming out from the late 70s, which is still fresh and wonderful.
Just one more thing. Is the New York Film Festival still an important event for people in your area?
For releasing films, absolutely. If you're going to release a film in the fall or winter, it's really great to
Yeah, they don't.
The platform.
Their lineup doesn't have many films that have distributors, though. Actually, most of the films seem to be still available. So, yeah, it's always worth checking out their lineup and seeing.
I want to thank you so much, all of you. Emily Russo, co-founder and co-president of Zeitgeist, David Finkel, partner and co-founder of Oscilloscope Laboratories, and Amy Heller, president and co-founder of Milestone Film and Video. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
For us, too. Thank you.